Well, I am glad indeed that Time Magazine has made Pope Francis its Man of the Year for 2013. Francis clearly has captured the imagination of the world. I think it's fair to say he's breathed a kind of new spirit into the church, and I'm delighted, really, the secular press has picked up on that. The authors of the article are right in saying that his name set the tone for his papacy. First person ever in 2,000 years to choose this name, Francis, as his papal name. And it's drawing on the great spirit of Francis of Assisi. And you see it in a thousand ways with Pope Francis. The little details of matter, his decision to stay in the Casa Santa Marta, the papal sort of hotel, rather than the apostolic palace. Think of his decision to use this kind of old beat-up looking car rather than the Vatican limousine. His embrace of the man with the sphere, you know, disfigurement. How like St. Francis embracing the leper. Think, too, maybe the one that captured the imagination of the world most is going to the hotel where he had stayed and paying his own bill. I mean, it wasn't just PR. Those are ways of instantiating this embrace very much of the Franciscan spirit. Think, too, of the interviews now that the Pope did a few months ago that garnered a lot of attention and controversy around the world. The points he made there are very much in line with this sort of new focus. He wants Catholic priests and other ministers to lead, not with the hot-button issues, but to lead with the merciful face of Christ, to lead with this outreach. That wonderful characterization of the church as a field hospital, as a place where the walking wounded of the postmodern secularist world come, a place where people come for merciful care, that's wonderful, and it's a real, you know, shift in emphasis. Even the famous, you know, who am I to judge in regard to the question of homosexuality, again, it's not signaling a change in the church's teaching on that matter, but it's a change certainly in attitude and focus and approach, seems to me. So in all those ways, Pope Francis, I think, has done something really new and has quite appropriately grasped the imagination of the world. Think, too, of that one. It really strikes me where he says communion, Holy Communion, should not be construed as a prize for the morally perfect, but rather as medicine, you know, for those who are sick in soul. Well, Thomas Aquinas said the same thing a long time ago, that the Eucharist is food and medicine for those who are hungry and sick. So again, there he's not signaling a change in doctrine, but a change certainly in attitude. However, there's been something that's been bugging me really since Francis was elected Pope, and it's on really massive display in the Time Magazine article, and that's a tendency to differentiate sharply between this beautiful, gentle Francis who emphasizes the merciful face of Christ and bad old Benedict and bad old John Paul II who are hung up on doctrine and dogma, driving a wedge between these elements of the church's life. Well, this is really so much silliness. If I can cite the much maligned poor Pope Benedict, Benedict said, I think very helpfully, the church has always done three basic things. It cares for the poor, it worships God, and it evangelizes. Those three things. Now, it is true, if you isolate the care for the poor from the other two become distorted. So the worship of God will devolve into something lifeless, or as the Pope himself said, a kind of liturgical fussiness. That's true. The liturgy should be connected to social justice, concern for the poor, etc. More to it, if you divorce evangelization from care for the poor, that will devolve into the church being a debating society. So that's right. I mean, you need to bring the concern for the poor right into the heart of the church's life. However, it also works the other way. If you isolate concern for the poor from the other two, concern for the poor becomes distorted. And the church devolves in pretty short order into a social service organization. And Pope Francis himself has said many times, hasn't he? The church is not an NGO. The church is not some social service organization. The three elements are tied tightly together. But listen to the authors of the Time article. I want to cite a couple things directly. Listen. In a matter of months, Francis has elevated the healing mission of the church as servant and comfort of hurting people in an often harsh world, above the doctrinal police work so important to his recent predecessors. And then this, his, Francis' vision, is of a pastoral and not doctrinaire church. Well, this is just a lot of nonsense. this sharp bifurcation. I mean, people's memories are so short. John Paul II was a hero in regard to reaching out to the poor, visiting those in the slums, reaching out to the marginalized in every possible way, hugging AIDS victims, going to Calcutta. People's memories are so short. He did all those things, and he linked them very strongly to the church's doctrinal life and its life of worship. The same is true of Pope Benedict. So that we shouldn't overemphasize that demarcation. But, you know, the person behind a lot of this mischief, in my judgment, is the 18th century philosopher Immanuel Kant, clearly one of the four or five greatest philosophers. But I have to tell you, I've been reading Kant for many years. He's a thinker that I disagree with on almost every major issue. And I think here he's a source of tremendous mischief. Because Kant famously said, religion in its authentic, grown-up, enlightened form boils down to ethics. Religion is finally about being a good person, being an ethically upright person. Kant tended to say, look, the doctrinal claims of the churches, you know, we can't verify them. They've been the source of tremendous conflict. The worship offered by the churches is kind of a, you know, warmed over primitivism. What religion is finally about is ethics. Now, has that trickled down into the general population? You bet. I'll give you a prime example. How many people will say some version of this? You know, it doesn't really matter what you believe as long as you're a good person. You know, the religions, finally it's about loving your neighbor. Well, see, that Kantian attitude has very much pervaded the modern sensibility. But it is repugnant to classical Christianity, which has always kept the three elements together. Read any of the Gospels, read any of the Pauline epistles, you see a massive interest in doctrine. Jesus is called the Logos, isn't he, in John's Gospel? It's called the Word of God. Clarity about doctrine, the claims of the church, the teaching of the church, is elemental in the first Christians. Moreover, come up through the early Christian centuries. Look at Irenaeus and Augustine and Jerome and Chrysostom and come up into the Middle Ages with Anselm and Bonaventure and Thomas Aquinas. Come up in the modern period with Ignatius and John Henry Newman. Come up into the 20th century with Balthasar and Ronner and John Paul II. From the beginning till today, the church is hugely interested in doctrinal clarity. The worship of God. Look at the churches. I mean, that dot the landscape wherever the a Catholic world has gone. Keeping the three together has always been fundamental for the church. Moreover, look at the great figures up and down of the Catholic centuries, from Irenaeus and Augustine to Chrysostom and Jerome. Augustine come in the Middle Ages with Thomas Aquinas and Anselm and Bonaventure. Come up into the modern period with Ignatius and Newman, John Paul II. What you see is a huge concern for doctrine, for worship. I mean, look at the churches that dot the landscape wherever the Catholic Church has gone. And I might draw special attention to a particular figure, namely Francis of Assisi himself. Obviously, he's concerned for the poor, the marginalized, showing the mercy of God. Everyone knows that. But recent research has shown, from his own sort of letters and so on, one of the primary concerns of Francis of Assisi was liturgical propriety. Making sure that altars were in good shape, that there were purificators, that there were the chalices were well kept. He was very interested in the worship of God. He didn't drive a wedge between those aspects of the church's life. Here's something, too, now from the Time article that I thought was interesting and implicitly undermined this argument I was trying to make. The authors point out that Pope Francis spends a large part of his day in prayer. Wakes up at 5, prays until 7, at which point he has Mass. And so there you've got about 2 hours and 45 minutes of prayer to begin every day. He goes through his day, which, of course, is largely concerned with matters of doctrine, liturgy, et cetera, et cetera. He ends his day with more prayer after dinner before the Blessed Sacrament. Here's someone who is hugely interested in the right worship of God. Where is his concern for the poor coming from? It's coming from that source. More to it, the very article ends with Francis's one of his Wednesday audience talks. What's his topic? The resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And he asks the people, he departs from his text, and he asks them, do you believe it? And they say, si, yes. And again, do you believe it? Yes, it comes back. What's the resurrection but the central doctrine of the church, which was presented and defended from the earliest days? The first Christians died to defend that doctrine. That's the doctrine that orders all the other teachings of the church. It all centers around the resurrection. Francis asking the crowds, do you believe it? Eliciting a response, yes, shows he is hugely interested in doctrinal clarity. And I would argue his concern for the poor comes from that. So, I'm with Time Magazine. I'm glad we're celebrating Pope Francis. I'm glad for all the things that they emphasize. But I would remind Time Magazine and much of the other commentariat, don't drive a wedge between the three essential tasks of the church.